Good morning and welcome to Friday, the 21st of August. I have been sitting with four stories since about 4 this morning, and they turned out to have something in common that I did not expect when I started reading. Nothing today is about a new model. Everything today is about the gap between a thing that works and a thing that is actually being used. Pour yourself something. Get comfortable and let us get into them. First up, NVIDIA has agreed to pay roughly $6 billion to license the model development software built by a company called Poolside and to hire 109 of its employees. The number came out of a letter Poolside sent to its own investors, reported first by newcomer and then confirmed by The Information. The newsletter AI News over at Latent Space puts a bigger frame around the same transaction, describing a $12 billion structure in which the founders stay behind with the remaining company for about $1 billion, and the departing staff take the larger share. The two accounts differ on the arithmetic, but they agree completely on what happened. The overwhelming majority of Poolside's technical organization now works for NVIDIA, and the corporate shell, along with its data center business, stays independent. I want you to sit with how few people that $6 billion buys. Poolside's co-founder Iso Kant said publicly less than a month ago that fewer than 70 people built the company's model and that fewer than 115 worked on the whole effort across engineering and research combined. And he was being generous with that count because he included himself. So, 109 transferred employees is not a team. It is the team. What the licensing fee is really paying for is not a product and not a customer base. It is a working end-to-end pipeline for training frontier coding models, plus the people who know how to run it, which turns out to be the same asset described two different ways. The structure will look familiar. License the technology, hire the staff, do not buy the company, and have both sides insist to the press that this is neither an acquisition nor an acqui-hire. That pattern has been used repeatedly over the past 2 years. What is new is who is doing it. NVIDIA has spent a decade positioning itself as the supplier to everybody rather than a competitor to anybody, and buying an in-house capability to train frontier code models moves that line in a way that its customers will notice. It also follows an existing relationship. NVIDIA was already an investor in Poolside before this, so Jensen Huang went from writing a check to licensing the factory and hiring the workforce inside a few months. For the venture side, arriving in the same week as Stripe's roughly $7.5 billion purchase of OpenRouter, it reads as liquidity in a market that has been short of exits. For everyone else, it is another data point on the price of a functioning training team, which continues to be set well above the price of anything the team has actually shipped. Moving on to our second story, The Information spent 2 days this week at Actuate, a robotics conference in San Francisco, with about 1,200 founders, engineers, and developers in the room, and came away with a framing that several people there offered independently. Robot learning right now looks roughly like language modeling did just after GPT-2 came out in 2019. Models are starting to do a variety of things without being specially trained for each one, and they are doing all of those things badly enough that the honest word for it is promise rather than product. The evidence supports both halves of that. Chelsea Finn, the Stanford professor who co-founded Physical Intelligence, got applause from the room by playing a clip of a robot arm making a latte. The arm moved slowly, and a human had to steam the milk. The technically interesting part is not that a machine produced coffee, because robot baristas already serve drinks at San Francisco Airport. It is that the airport machines run scripted control code, while the demonstration ran a single learned policy, trained to do many different things. Meanwhile, the failure list is short and humbling. Untangling cables, chopping vegetables, and a long tail of manipulation that any person considers beneath mention. The comparison to 2019 is doing real work, and it is worth being precise about what it claims. In 2019, the language field had an architecture that clearly worked and was limited by data and compute rather than by ideas, and the 4 years that followed were mostly a scaling story. Whether robotics is in that same position is exactly the open question, and I do not think anyone at that conference would tell you they know. The data situation is not analogous, There is no web-scale corpus of teleoperated manipulation trajectories, and the gap between simulation and reality has no counterpart in text. What the field does have now is a shared model class, generalist, vision language action policies, and enough venture money to run the experiment properly. Read that alongside the steady flow of vision language action papers on the archive this week, and the mood is less a claim about capability than a claim about phase. The community has stopped arguing about whether learned generalist policies are the right approach and started arguing about how much data and compute it takes to make them work. Third up, War on the Rocks published an analysis this week that reads several years of the People's Liberation Army Daily, which is the official newspaper of China's Central Military Commission, and finds a strikingly consistent line on artificial intelligence and command. Machines may sort, censor data, draft courses of action, and compress the interval between observing something and acting on it. Final authority and the responsibility attached to it stay with the human commander. An article from last year states it directly. Artificial intelligence cannot resolve the allocation of command authority and responsibility because only a human commander can. The argument the piece makes is that this position is becoming harder to hold in practice, and the reason is structural rather than rhetorical. The same institution publishing that reassurance is pushing what it calls intelligentized warfare into planning, targeting, and force management systems, and inside a compressed decision window, the practical difference between a machine-generated recommendation and a decision gets very thin. If the reason the system exists is the tempo advantage, then a commander who routinely overrides it is giving up the capability that was bought, and a commander who routinely accepts it is a commander in name. That tension is not unique to one military. Human-on-the-loop language appears in Western policy documents too, and the same forces apply on both sides. Latency requirements, sensor volume, and adversary tempo all push toward more autonomy, while accountability frameworks push the other way. What makes this piece worth your time is that it documents an army working through the problem in its own newspaper, rather than treating it as settled, and it shows the doctrinal position and the acquisition trajectory moving in different directions at the same time. And for our fourth and final story today, the Defense Innovation Unit has stood up a new business unit called the Bridge Program, aimed squarely at the problem of proven commercial prototypes that never reach the people who would use them. The director, Owen West, put specific numbers in the memorandum unveiling it. Within 1 year, the unit says it will open co-use classified facilities nationwide, cut cyber authorization timelines by half, and provide end-to-end testing capability for small companies that have nowhere to demonstrate. The three bottlenecks named there are the right three: security clearances gate, who can work on a program at all; classified workspace access gates, where the work can physically happen, which for a small company without its own secure facility means it does not happen; testing and accreditation gate, whether a working system can ever touch an operational network; and the cyber authorization process in particular has historically eaten more calendar time than the engineering it certifies. Halving that is the single most consequential of the three commitments if it holds, and the reason is compounding. Every month spent waiting for authorization is a month during which the software being certified drifts further from the version that was tested. Sarah Pearson, the unit's chief of strategic initiatives and a former Navy officer, will lead the program, which she has been developing for about a year. The context here is a defense technology market where the constraint has plainly moved. Capital is abundant. Prototypes are everywhere. What is scarce is the institutional path from a successful demonstration to a program of record. And the Bridge Program is an admission that this path is the actual product that needs building. The 12-month timeline gives an unusually clear standard to measure it against. And on the very same day, the Government Accountability Office published a report on the Army's next generation command and control effort, warning that missing schedule and cost data leave the service's ability to scale that network genuinely in doubt. the Army has detailed schedules only through fiscal year 2027, against a stated goal of fielding the full technology stack across 11 divisions and 4 corps by the end of fiscal year 2032. Those two documents, published hours apart, describe the two halves of one problem: getting technology into the building, and then getting it out to the units at scale. So what was this morning really about? 4 stories, no new models, and in every one of them, the value sat somewhere other than the artifact. $6 billion for a pipeline and the 109 people who can operate it, not for the weights they produced, a robot arm whose slow latte matters because of what is running underneath it, a doctrine that holds only until the tempo advantage is the reason you bought the system, and a memorandum that treats the paperwork between a demonstration and a deployment as the engineering problem it has always been. The capability on all 4 counts is the easy part. Moving it is the hard part. There is a great deal more in the full digest today, and I would point you in particular at a replication study, finding that deception probes, which look nearly perfect on the data set they were trained on, fall to roughly chance the moment you test them on a different one. That is the same lesson wearing a lab coat. I will be back tomorrow with the week's recap. Until then, mind the distance between built and used.